Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers. We provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. And today we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome though. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. Of course, if you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. Every profession needs its heroes, the people who have the courage to challenge convention, drive outstanding achievement, and give our discipline a noble name. In this episode, we'll be speaking in depth to one such hero, learn about what they do, how they've got here, and a bit about what's made them who they are today. I'm delighted to be joined today by the CRM director at Namecheap, Jonathan Cann. Jonathan, how are you doing?
Very well. How are you?
I'm very, very good. I can see you and you can see me across Zoom. But for the benefit of our listeners, where do we find you today?
You find me in my house, not surprisingly, with all the announcements recently, in Windsor, in the UK.
Very cool. And ordinarily kind of government COVID announcements about the latest variant aside, are you usually working from home or
do it's a strange one and quite peculiar structure that I work in. So I've been working from home for 6 years. I have a team of probably now 10 all around the globe who are all remote working, and okay, we don't actually have an office. So the company is around 2,000 people, but at the moment, everybody, even customer services, are all remote working.
And so your role at Namecheap is as CRM director. Do you find that actually the CRM director role could actually be done and maybe a little bit better if it was face-to-face? Or actually, are you completely comfortable with it working remotely?
I think I've just done a couple of brainstorming sessions with a Miro board, which is basically a whiteboard online with the team.
Right.
And that we basically realized that we can do a lot more brainstorming if we were in the same place. And right, I think there is we've done a number of years without doing that sort of thing, but we suddenly realized that we actually should invest more time in this sharing of ideas and constructing ideas together. I had a meeting with a colleague of mine. We talked about strategy, how we could work together better. And it was like being in an office. So you can do it, but there are times, I mean, sadly, I've come from the world of the whiteboard, so I love scribbling. And I do miss the time that you can jump up and grab the red pen and start drawing clouds and lines and squares. Yeah.
I miss those situations where you kind of put all of this stuff on the whiteboard and then you suddenly realize you've used the wrong pen and you can't erase it.
Yes, and then you spend 10 minutes scribbling.
Yeah, because you can't do it online. It's kind of so much more efficient, right? So much more effective. Tell us a bit about what Namecheap does.
So I think Namecheap, within the UK, if I look at Namecheap, it's very similar to GoDaddy. Most people know who GoDaddy is. Namecheap is second in the market. We sell parts to make a website. So we sell domains, we sell SSL and hosting. So all those little bits that you can create a website with.
Right. And what is the kind of contribution as CRM director that you make within that business?
That's a great question, and sometimes I ask myself that question every day.
You can edit that bit out.
No, please keep it in, it's fine. CRM, as you probably know, and most people are aware, that differs per company. And so my role is to keep customers longer, make them happier, hopefully, and get them to buy more. So very, very customer focused. And I think we, because my team and I have to be the voice of the customer within the organization. I've set up a customer insight function within the organization, and we've got roughly over 3 million customers, but do we know who they are? And I think not only do we do the standard approach, but we also are the voice of the customer to make sure that the company stays customer first. Everyone talks about being customer first or customer centered of everything they do, the standard rollout of that, but can you actually deliver on it? And so we are constantly probably a pain because we say, why are we doing that? What's in it for the customer? And so that is the challenge we face in our organization, is trying to drive the customer first agenda. So it does become part and parcel of everybody's thinking. It's not there yet. We're pretty good and we're very renowned for customer service, but customer service is not customer first. It is part of it and a good step there, but it's the rest of it. How do we get the product people to think about the customer? How do we get UX to think about the customer? How do we join everything together so we act as one organization rather than parts?
I guess part of your ability to be able to do that is defined by where you sit within the organization. So in Namecheap, is CRM part of marketing or is it part of strategy, or where do you sit?
That's a great question, mainly because we are in a pod. They call pods the tribes. I've seen them described as tribes, very much of a Spotify approach where each product has its own pod, its own autonomy to make actions, which does drive a very quick approach, but also drives a challenge because people are very product focused rather than customer focused. CRM sits within marketing. And that's basically where we've evolved from, where we were recruited to. But we do have influence over a lot of things. We'd love to have more influence of a lot more things, but that's where we start from, mainly because people see us, you know, that's where I'm measured on. How many other products have people got? How long do they last? So my key metrics are those things. And so from a commercial point of view, you know, that's where I'm measured at the end of the year on.
Okay. You gave me a very pithy a summary in terms of what you do, of what I would say was probably your vision. I would that I could be as articulate about what my vision is. So all credit to you. But perhaps can you unpick that a little bit? What are some of the activities that sit below that vision that your team undertake?
Okay. Yes, it's standard, like, okay, focus groups, customer surveys, identifying the gaps where we know there are problems or we don't know about the customer. That's one part of it. That's the customer insight side. I'm also running the email channel. So we're looking at strategy of the email contact strategy for the customer rather than just keep selling. How do we move from we're renowned for discounts. So how do we move to have a conversation with the customer rather than just keep saying money off, money off, money off? Yeah. How do we move from there? So it's all email, you know, and that's the delivery. My team are about developing the customer journey. So you're looking at welcome programs, you're looking at retention programs, you're looking in life development of the newsletter. So those are the tactical tasks which we have to do in a way of BAU. We have to keep the numbers coming in. But also at the top level, you've got to look at, and this is where I'm sitting, and that's where I probably can speak very fluently about the vision, is because we're in the planning stage and I'm trying to create the vision now and to resell that vision back into the company, which is the challenge as well.
There's an awful, I mean, the range of stuff that you're covering there is pretty broad. So perhaps you get, and I can't imagine that you like all every part of it. maybe I'm doing a disservice. But maybe there are some things that you especially enjoy, and some things that you kind of put off to the point where, you know, I'll do this podcast with Dave first. so where, you know, what sits where?
I think the good so what I really enjoy, and is something I've learned probably in the last six 10 years, is. Actually, I recruit people who are better than me, and I like to learn from them. So the people I'm recruiting, firstly, Emily, who's my customer, who does customer insights, fantastic. Some of the stuff she brings out, ideas, I help her make happen from budgets, from selling upwards, but I want to make sure that she is, I couldn't do her job, but I can help her, you know, actually improve, hopefully, going forward.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really, really good. What I struggle with is probably when it becomes business as usual, when it becomes the same thing, you know, the same thing every week. I like new stuff. I like the little creative chunks that, right, that's, again, going back to talking about the vision, that's exciting. It's like, how do we make that happen? But as soon as we hit, you know, we start to the delivery and it all becomes, the process is seamless, mm-hmm. and you have to tweak. Now I'm looking for the new thing. Mm-hmm. Sadly, it's I like to launch things and like to maintain them and learn about things, but it's when it becomes quite easy, then you start to say, right, where's my next thing?
Yeah, yeah, that's a great way of looking at it. And I love the way you've talked to me before about the way that you view your team and your management approach. And it's so inspiring to hear that.
It's really frustrating. Everyone who manages people, they're the most frustrating individuals out there, but also because everyone's different. And they don't do it. It's like, but it's great. And you know, I've got a couple of frustrating people, but actually I learn more about managing them than I do those easy people. Because how do you influence somebody whose tone of voice is not great that impacts other people? So how do I do that?
Oh. Yeah, no, there's lots of tricksy stuff, but lots of stuff to learn as well, yep. right? So great role, sounds really exciting. How did you get here? I'm kind of interested in the key steps on your journey to being CRM director, but I'd like to do it from the perspective of our listeners. So, you know, are there things as you look back on your journey that you kind of recommend that other people could do and that might help in turn their learning and their development?
Okay. I'll just look at it from myself, but also where I get to, because obviously different roles, different people, different journeys. Sure. I think I probably put it into three chapters. I think my first chapter was when I met you actually at O2. Hmm. And basically I did a variety of roles. I was 10 years at O2 in the end. Variety of roles, from head of customer communication at Postpay. I ended up at head of marketing at Broadband before it was sold to Sky. So a variety of different places. But I think the key thing that O2 taught me, or Telefonica as it is now, is numbers. Know your numbers. And be aware of the commercials behind it. If you are in a role where you are driven by numbers, and the company was massively numerical, and that's why it was very successful. But you know, you've got to know your churn rate. You've got to know how many products we sell. What's the profit? Always ask Monday morning before you've turned your computer on. And I got burnt quite heavily, being, you know, chewed over by managers because not knowing your numbers. And ever since then, you know, I know my numbers. First thing I say, and it annoys my team constantly, you know, what's the metrics? What are we measuring? What are we learning from this? That was one. And the second one was, it was probably in parts, probably the most customer facing company I've ever worked for. It introduced me to customers, the center of everything we do. I think, I don't know if it was the very first time that was ever used, but it was definitely introduced like that. And very heavily influenced by the customer. Speaking to customers face to face was really interesting. Then you go and listen to focus groups, and it dragged that side of things. In part, I think one of the key things that showed the company was really customer centric was its commission structure was based around customer satisfaction for a couple of years. And wow, has that ever been done since? Don't know, but I've never seen it like that. And so for those two parts, numbers, customer first, I think that was key for my learning. I then moved, probably the second chapter, I then went freelancing because I had spent 10 years in one place. I wanted to see what the rest of the world looked like. Although I then jumped into Vodafone, which looked very similar to O2, but you know, red rather than blue. The good side of it was, though, I went to a Vodafone Global, which was really interesting because you create it from a global function, and then you have to sell that to the MVNOs or the, the local network. So you, creating something globally, then selling it to Vodafone France or Vodafone Germany or Vodafone Ireland was really, really interesting. Storytelling, actually creating something you could sell internally was really interesting. They love their PowerPoint. Vodafone loved their PowerPoint. And those sort of skills of storytelling and selling internally, again, helped me, especially with the numbers as well, support going forward. I then moved 6 months to a place called Travelport. Very, very different, outside the mobile world. But it introduced me to technology. And I think, and I was working with Eloqua system. And that started to see, right, okay, this is a great system. What could it do? But I understood that actually it's not about the system, it's about the people using the system. I did 6 months there. So that was a chapter there. And I think my final chapter before I went to Namecheap, I went to the consultancy on the agency side, which was very, very different for me because I've always been client side. And suddenly you're actually having to work with people who they make the decision, not necessarily what you do. And so I had huge highs and huge lows there. But working with a data agency, working with data and understanding what Salesforce portfolio, what Adobe's portfolio, what Eloqua's or Oracle's portfolio could do, the amount of marketing technology out there to support the use of data to make customer experience, customer service, e-commerce happen, that just opened my eyes to this hugely. And going back to what, in a way, a theme about, you know, working with people, it also introduced me to the importance of teamwork and the importance of trust. When the projects went really, really, really well, you know, you trusted your team, they delivered together, they worked together. When it didn't go so well is when that trust broken down, whether it was with your client or whether it was within the team itself. And so if I look back and say the key areas that I've learned, one is numbers, customer, understanding of customer. In my world, it's the marketing technology, data, but it goes back to also team building, is people, making sure that you have around you people you can trust, and you can trust and they trust you. And I think that's the key, is also the two sides of it. Look at yourself as well as look at them. Because a lot of the time it could be yourself that's creating the problem. And as I got older, I've realized often, and I think I've spoken to you about this before, is ego. Does your ego get in the way? At a young age, my ego used to be rampant because I thought I knew everything. And as slowly as I'd gone on, you suddenly eyes open. Yeah. And you realize that the frustration is caused not by the person that you're talking to, but it's by your ego thinking you should know it. Mm. Or why didn't you say that? Mm. Well, that's not a bad thing, but, you know, just let it go. Mm.
It's really interesting hearing your story. And I guess two things in particular kind of strike me. And actually, they're not the first two things that you said, because actually the data, I'd have been surprised if, knowing you, the knowing your numbers and the customer centricity bit wouldn't have come out quite significantly for you. I'm really interested first in the emphasis that you place on people, because if I might say so, that's actually quite unusual for somebody who has taken the career path that you have, because I'd kind of almost be expecting somebody with your CV to be talking about tech and emphasizing the importance of technology within this. But you kind of almost seem to have had an allergic reaction to that and bounced back to the people.
But tech's all great. Everyone can buy tech, and everyone can go and, well, we need the new Salesforce. We need Adobe. Well, why do you need it? Go back to the customer and understand firstly what they want, and then go and find the bit of kit, rather than what a lot of companies, and I've seen it done in the, you know, when I was in the consultancy side, is they just say, I want that. Mm. And you have to drag it back. But also, there's no point putting a bit of kit in if you haven't brought the people with you, because majority of CRM systems that I have seen use about 25% of the functionality, because either people don't get it, people aren't trained, or people are just completely allergic to it, as you said. And I think there is one angle that is probably going back to people. I think it's, I've realized that, okay, if you can listen and you can and drive people and understand people and encourage people, you can make bigger steps than if you put the next marketing bit of kit in. It's just getting people to move forward with you. And I think it's because you, I see how other people are the great leaders, and leaders is sounded too wrong, but the great managers I've worked with, I understand how they get the best out of me. And if people had time to invest in me, I would work twice as hard. But there are people who didn't have time. And again, going, my reaction was, okay, I'll just do my job. Can you get them to do that a little bit more just by understanding them, understanding the direction they're going? So I think it's a balance between data, it's a balance between technology, but people is huge.
Do you think business marketers are blinded by the sheer amount of technology that's out there that they could use?
Yes, absolutely. I think you're blinded. There's blinded by how much data there is out there and how to use it. They're blinded by, I think you're blinded by different pieces of kit. I had somebody discussing with me lead management the other day, and they said, well, we've got the CRM system and that does part of it, but what does lead management do? And this is where the confusion lies, is everybody has lots of bits of tools. Do they talk to each other? Do you have people to make, you know, the interaction to talk to the bits of kit? And also go back to, what do you want it for? How are you going to measure it? What's your return on investment? All of these things are important, and it's a constant learning piece. Is don't put the piece of kit in, expect it to work, and then don't invest in it again. It's a constant utilization of it. Reinforce why you should do it, reinforce the benefits of it, and then sell again. Say, look, we've just bought this bit of kit in, look what it's done. And then you suddenly get buy-in in people, because I've seen, my wife's talking to me about it as well, is as soon as a tool gets a bad name, everybody starts talking about it, how rubbish it is. And then you're in a really difficult position.
What's the late? No, definitely. What do you love about CRM?
I think CRM, I love about marketing. Let's turn it, because I've done both sides. What I love about marketing is the creation, the building of the development of something. I used to use this analogy that I like to take something home for my mum to see that I've done. So my kids bring back, look, I've done this great picture. And it's like, fantastic. And then
something to put on the fridge.
Yes, exactly. And this is what I like doing, is you develop. And this goes back to my early frustration about consultancy, is you would create these fantastic recommendations, these fantastic strategies, and you'll go and give them to the client and they go, great job, thanks very much. And then you would off you go and work with another client. But you would never see them go from your presentation, your recommendations to development and implementation. What I like to do is own the whole thing, develop the idea, sell it in, then go and say, right, how are we going to do it? And we develop and lead and, develop, launch, learn, measure. That's the bit that I really, really enjoy.
So that begs the question, what's currently on the Can family fridge? What's the latest? What's the latest in either marketing or CRM that's keeping you engaged?
It's reselling CRM. It's going back from business as usual to revirtualizing it. Because we've been, I've done the role for 6 years, and you start to hit the business as usual phase. You've got everything, the processes are flowing and everything's great. But then you suddenly, people start whinging. And I got to a stage in my career. I remember when I was a youngster and I used to whinge all the time because things weren't right. And then you realize, 10 years later, well, actually by whinging, you don't actually achieve anything. You just make, people think you're the whinger. It doesn't actually help anyone. So how do you move on? It's like, let's refresh. Let's actually say, well, stop complaining about if you know, stop complaining about no one else has got a strategy. If we haven't got a strategy, how can we complain? Yeah. So it's going back, refreshing, and then I'm trying to drive the customer first approach again and constantly do that, because that is where getting the voice of the customer back into the company and start to challenge every point. We've gone through changes, massive organizational changes recently or in the last couple of years. And it's like, how do we become louder? How do we turn the volume up internally as well as externally? So we've started to look at not only our customers outside, but our customers inside. And we have two different themes of work. So not only are we dealing with our customers internally, we're doing them externally, and we're going to try and balance that approach. So we turn the volume up, become much more important within the company because that's where we think we should be, but also at the same time, driving better retention, understanding the customer better, and making sure that the company's dealing with the customers in a sympathetic way.
That's really impressive. It sounds like you're kind of going back around the circle again, but doing it based upon all of the learning that you've gathered from the experience of doing round one.
Yeah, well, yes. I think it's more exciting. If as I go back to what I get excited by, well, if I'm excited, the team is excited. They can invest in more of that as well. The key to this is I want them to give me their ideas, because I can't sit there and create a strategy, but I can use them. And so not only are we creating a 12-month strategy, we're also creating a vision.
Right.
So we are creating a vision. So me and my colleague are creating a vision to say, right, this is where CRM should be within this company. So we understand that whether we get there or not, but at least we created some direction or a view. And so that is, there's twofold. One, what we can do next year, but also create an idea of the identity of CRM within the company. Especially as the company's in massive transformation at the moment. So we need to be talking about this now. And if we don't start talking about it, you know, other people will talk about it instead of us.
That's really inspiring. Let's come to what you're reading at the moment then. So let's say, Jonathan, you're stranded on a desert island, but luckily you've got your recommended business marketing book / website / business model with you. What could that be and why?
If you saw my bookcase, you would understand that
usually when I'm actually talking to people, actually they've positioned their bookcase.
Well, I haven't got
it's
one.
It's almost Chinese Communist Party like, you know, and here's but you haven't done that.
So you read about people who says, and you've got to read how many business books a year. I went down to right, I need to read a business book per quarter. Because, you know, but I find them very, very tiresome. I'm not great on business books. I have so many business books at which I get through the first two paragraphs or the first chapter. And so I have to cut down, and I appreciate actually learning through reading and watching. But I think there's two books. Okay, there's three streams of books. The Do Lectures I find really, really good. Now, these are a series of small books, so you can read them very, very quickly, so you feel satisfied. No, you don't have to, and it doesn't constantly repeat anything. So it's like the Do Purpose, the Do Leadership, the Do Selling, and they do the Do Beekeeping. Really, really succinct books. And I'm just reading the Do Leadership one. And that's really good, because it said how it's written is really conversational. It's not theoretical. It doesn't constantly repeat everything every chapter. And you come out and you go, okay, I've done something. I've learned something. Even if you take two things away from a book. And the other one, Seth Godin, I like Purple Cow. I think it's a great book because I remember it. I still remember that. And I read that 20 years ago.
Almost the title of that book kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
No, doesn't it?
And Tribes. He wrote a piece on Tribes. The other piece I do like, I've now got into, is because obviously we don't commute at the moment, is I take my daughter to school. I then, and it's a 20-minute, 25-minute walk. On the way back, I stick a podcast on. And that's really relaxing. I quite relaxing. And I'm listening to Love Him or Hate Him. I know there's a variety of Simon Sinek and his Touch of Optimism. Very American, but he brings in a lot of different clients in, not clients, friends, who talk about humanity, talk about social media. I've just heard of her last one, race, diversity. And it challenges exactly what you've been thinking. And it's in the world we live in, a touch of optimism is I think, very, very useful. And I just think it is uplifting as you go through. And at the beginning of the morning, you know, after you drop your kid off, you have that little space between the two, 30 minutes, bring yourself up. I quite enjoy those.
Sounds like just what we all need right now. That. So if people want to find out more about Namecheap, what should they do?
Look up www.namecheap.com. It's very simple. It says in the name.
For asking.
Yes. Yeah, we're there. We're always there. You'll find us wherever you find any. Ask for a cheap domain. We're there.
Jonathan Cann, thanks so much for talking to me today.
No problem. Thank you.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guest, Jonathan Cann. And thanks to our technical man from Through the Eye, Andrew Gratian. Thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can. And email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. But I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.